You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Hello and welcome to this podcast, Advances in the Delayed Onset of Type 1 Diabetes, Strategies to Improve Awareness and Care for the Practicing Clinician, hosted by Med Learning Group. I'm Shruti and I'll be the host of today's podcast, which is also brought to you in collaboration with the National Infusion Center Association. I'm joined by Ashley Knapp, a registered nurse, co-founder of Local Infusion, and a seasoned leader in the infusion therapy space. And today she'll share her experience about practical considerations for the application of disease-modifying therapies for T1D in the community, with a specific focus on how community infusion centers or clinics can think about starting or establishing a clinical infusion program with specifically teplizumab. So Ashley, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Perfect. So to start off, we know that teplizumab has mostly been administered in academic medical centers. In your experience, what has been the biggest challenges in bringing this treatment to community practice, including infusion centers?
Yeah, that's a great question, because there are definitely some differences with this drug. So my center's local infusion, we have over 20 locations, and we infuse over 150 different drugs on our formulary for various conditions. This is the first indicated for this condition. So I was very excited to bring it onto our formulary. But this is a challenging infusion because it is 14 days in a row. Not all infusion centers or even community practices that offer infusions are open 7 days a week. A lot of times they may only be open 5 or even fewer, 3 days a week. So when you're looking at infusing a patient that is, you know, needs to consecutively come in for 14 days in a row, there can be a lot of staffing considerations with that. And then another challenge is it's a very expensive product. Not all, you know, private practices that are offering infusions are comfortable doing what's called buy and bill, where they're buying the drug up front and then billing the insurance for a product which with such a high price tag.
Thank you for that. And you mentioned some of the considerations and challenges for during the 14-day infusion course. I kind of wanted to expand on that and ask if any particular challenges in monitoring patients during that course, also both in terms of clinical safety, but also managing patient expectations.
Yeah, absolutely. So I advise anyone that's thinking about prescribing or infusing this drug to definitely get with their reps in the field to be educated, because there are definitely some differences. There is a warning on the box that states, you know, patients can have the cytokine release syndrome. So you'd need to be monitoring and pre-medicating those patients for sure. So I always want to stress to our nurses, you know, to be educated, to understand what they will expect to see. And then, of course, most patients receiving this drug do develop lymphopenia. So that is a consideration, because these patients do need to have labs drawn every few days while they're getting the 14-day dose. It generally does recover after the 5th day. However, it's something that does need to be closely monitored based on what the prescribing provider is comfortable with. And with that, you know, a lot of times with a 14-day infusion, the patient's going to be coming on the weekend. So it's a lot of planning as far as, you know, you need to have a real care plan in place of how are we going to communicate lab values back to the prescriber. You have to have that open line of communication when the patients are infusing. And also, how are the patients going to get their labs drawn? Our clinics at Local Infusion, we can draw labs on site. However, if it's on the weekend, you know, that the local lab may not be open to pick up. So the patient needs to make arrangements to make sure that they have their labs drawn and that their clinical team is able to review those results prior to their next infusion.
And if a patient develops side effects or is showing lab abnormalities during the treatment course, what is the process for identifying and communicating them with the referring provider? Do community infusion centers have providers that are familiar with addressing the side effects?
Yeah, it's with this drug, it's a lot of coordination with the prescribing provider. I encourage, anyone that's administering or prescribing this drug to have the full training with the MSL, just to make sure that they fully understand what to expect as far as the response and also what the standard is for the lab monitoring. And that's why I said it's so important to have that open line of communication with the prescriber because, you know, you're going to have your patients there on the weekend. You want to make sure you can be in touch and you're doing what the prescriber feels is the best based on the patient's lab values. And we did have a scenario like that where a patient's levels dipped down a little bit, you know, very borderline. So luckily we had already set up this care plan in advance and we had the prescriber's cell phone number. She knew the patient was coming in on a Saturday and Sunday morning. She was on call in case we needed her. We were able to talk through it and continue the infusion. But it's really key to be able to make sure that you have that open line of communication with the prescriber so that, the patient's safety is in mind.
Very important points. And how are patients referred to infusion centers for teplizumab treatment? Who is typically involved in that process and what information is needed to get started?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. So it starts with the workup, right? We see the patient after they've been worked up. This could be ongoing for years for some of the diagnoses that we treat. We generally have been seeing these patients come through from pediatric endo or endocrinology, and the patients generally had a full workup with them when they're identified as a candidate for teplizumab. So local infusion, we handle the authorization. So what we ask for is any supporting documentation to be sent to us that supports that patient's diagnosis and their need for treatment. So any tried and failed medications, obviously that doesn't really apply in this case, but any testing that was done that supports that diagnosis. It's also extremely important for a drug like this with a high price tag and, you know, such a critical infusion for some of these patients, pediatric patients especially, to make sure that we've looked at the payer policy. So that can be done up front. I like to educate our prescribing physicians as well and work with them through that payer policy challenge. Let's say it's a patient that has a payer policy that didn't have this drug on formulary yet. If the provider doesn't know that, you know, they could be getting their hopes up or setting the patient's expectations up for failure when really we're going to find that there's no coverage. What we can do at that time is still work with the pharma company to ensure that the patient can get serviced. A lot of programs exist when there's inadequate coverage from a payer. However, it's always nice for the provider to be educated on what we are going up against. But I always say a full workup is the best. We need access to any of those documents so that we can plead our case to the insurance company. A lot of times my team will write up letters of medical necessity, have the prescribing provider take a look at that and, you know, add any pertinent documentation into that letter so that we have the strongest case possible when we're going to the insurance company to try to get a prior authorization approved.
In your experience, have patients transitioned from an in-clinic to a home-based setting for their infusions? Also, what factors going to make in that decision and what needs to be in place to support the transition?
Yeah, when a patient starts in a clinic or even in a hospital setting and transfers to home infusion, I think the biggest consideration there truly is how the drug is covered. So generally, in a clinic setting or in an ambulatory setting like ours, we're billing under the medical benefit for the patient's insurance coverage. When you have it done in the home, that can generally be billed under the pharmacy benefit. And a lot of times there can be different coverage between medical and pharmacy. There's a different cost implication to that as well. It's billed differently and applies towards a different out-of-pocket. So that's a financial concern that you do need to consider. I also think, especially with this drug, it's very important to realize that there are some side effects the patients are going to experience. I feel as though an ambulatory setting, you know, we have a controlled environment with a lot of different medications that we can treat a patient with if they do have side effects. Let's say they develop nausea. We have Zofran for that. Let's say they need a little bit more fluid or, you know, ibuprofen or Tylenol because they're developing aches. We have all of that on hand. In a home infusion setting, you know, the nurse is only going to be equipped with what has been dispensed to her. So there may be a situation where the patient is having side effects that nurse doesn't have the medications to treat in the home environment. The pro to this drug being delivered in home, though, is that it's 14 days in a row. And obviously, it can get a little tricky to get to an infusion center or a hospital to get an infusion every day for 14 days in a row. That can be a little daunting. But, you know, they really both have their pros and cons.
Can you speak to any differences based on your experience in managing the teplizumab infusions for adults compared to pediatric patients, whether it's in terms of preparation, monitoring, as well as patient and family education? Also, as a follow-up to that, what advice would you offer to infusion teams that may see both pediatric and adult patients?
Yes, that is a great question, especially since this drug is indicated for 8 years old and up. So we treat all of our pediatric patients the same at Local Infusion. When we identify a pediatric referral that comes across, our nurse practitioners assess that patient and generally have a consult call with the family, whether it's mom, dad, you know, the patients involved, depending on the age. We want to make sure that we are ready to accommodate that entire family and not just the patient, because we know, you know, they're going to have potentially siblings coming along, mom, dad, aunt, uncle, grandma. So we want to make sure that we're setting that family up for success. There's a few things that I would recommend doing for pediatric infusions. You obviously want to make sure that your anaphylaxis protocol in the center is up to date for both pediatrics, because it can have a different dose of epinephrine and things like that, weight-based medications versus the standard adult dose. So you want to be able to make sure that you can handle any sort of reaction that pediatric patient may have. And then, of course, from a lighter note, you want to make sure that the patient is entertained and has plenty to do. So a few things that we have are coloring books in the center. We have TV with Netflix. We have gaming systems for our pediatric patients. We do DoorDash if they're there for a longer period of time. The great thing about teplizumab is it's a 30-minute infusion. So by the time you hook up the IV and get it started, they're really not in the chair too long. But for some of our longer pediatric infusions, we like to make sure that they're comfortable and that we can brighten their day a little bit. So whether that's allowing them, you know, to order ice cream or Uber Eats, whatever can kind of make the time pass a little bit quicker and make it just a little bit more enjoyable. There are also some considerations for starting an IV on a pediatric patient. You want to make sure you have a smaller gauge needle, different things to distract them, lidocaine, and there's some different you know, types of tools that you can use so that it's a painless procedure, sprays and ointments that you can put on their skin. So those are all of the things that I like to consider for pediatric infusions. And then, of course, like I mentioned in the beginning, making sure that consult call has happened with the NP or the provider or the nursing team and family, because you want to understand you know, what to expect from the patient, what their fears are, what their anxieties are, and really try to accommodate them as best as possible.
Thank you. So we know that many infusion centers may not be familiar with teplizumab treatments. I want to ask, what advice would you give to community-based nurses and clinicians in those centers or practices that are looking to offer this therapy for the first time?
Yes, that's a great question. So like I mentioned, there are some nuances with this drug, including some different supplies and different calculations that need to be done to determine the patient's dose. So what I would recommend is always doing the education up front. There are a lot of great videos that are published that show how to do the calculation, because it is calculated based on body surface area, BSA, and the dosing does fluctuate between days 1 through 5, and then it remains stable for the remaining doses up to day 14. So you really have to understand how to calculate the dose. You need to understand what medications are required for the pre-meds, when you're going to be drawing your labs and how that's going to be facilitated, and then also which supplies you're going to need. So other infusions that I've given, you do need to mix this one a little bit differently. You have to get a sterile vial, and not all infusions, really none of the infusions that I've given require that. So you're going to need to do some pre-planning and pre-ordering to make sure that you have everything on hand. Another thing is that, you know, based on the patient's BSA, they could require two vials each day. So you want to make sure all your calculations are done. You have all the supplies on hand that you need. And the best way to start to figure out what you need is to do that education, either with the pharma company or educate yourself online. Look at the dosing and administration guides that are offered and watch the videos.
And with teplizumab being clinically available, this marks an important transition in how we think about T1D treatment. Several other disease-modifying therapies are also in clinical development, with the majority of them being immunotherapy. So we know the future is looking bright. Are there any last pearls you want to share with our audience? Anything you've learned so far about working with infusion centers as we look forward into this future when ideally community clinicians are treating T1D with disease-modifying therapies?
Yeah, I think that's really what excites me about this industry and, you know, why I wake up every day. There's so many new medications for new diseases that are coming down the pipeline that are infusion therapies. So this really gets me excited. I think what I would recommend is, for these clinicians that maybe weren't always treating, with immunotherapies or biotherapies, to definitely get educated, reach out to the pharma companies, work with the FRMs and the MSLs that the pharma companies, you know, lend those resources towards you, so that you can really understand exactly how to identify a patient and how these therapies can be utilized in that setting. If it's a practice that's looking to start infusion, I always direct them to the NICA Standards of Excellence. You can find that on their website, infusioncenter.org. And that is a really great starting point to make sure that the clinic is set up for success and is really able to provide the best care. And then, of course, partner with your ambulatory infusion centers that are already in your community. One thing at Local Infusion that we pride ourselves on is that we're able to get therapies on our formulary very quickly. So if it's a new treatment that comes out that can be offered in an outpatient setting, it's likely that we're going to have that available to those patients.
Perfect. Ashley, thank you so much for being here today and for this great information. And thank you for joining us. We hope that you found this beneficial for your practice and will help you with the application of teplizumab and other disease-modifying therapies for T1D to real-world patient care. We hope you'll listen to another episode from this series. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. In support of improving patient care, MedLearning Group is jointly accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education, or ACCME, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, ACPE, and the American Nurses Credentialing Center, ANCC, to provide continuing education for the healthcare team. I'd also like to give a special thank you to our supporter, Sanofi US, who provided an educational grant for this activity. Thank you again, and have a great day.